Well, comrades and visitors, I have your attention. I would like to bring to the attention of the members of the party. Mr. Joe requests us to speak for 4 minutes or something like that. I wonder if the members of the party agree on that.
Friends, I want to make 3-4 statements. Number one is that my concept of government is not the concept like Margaret Thatcher has. I think government is like the same as society elects executive committee. And executive committee is always answerable to the society. And executive committee functions on behalf of the society and on all major issues, asks the members of the society. So therefore, when I ask for world government, I don't mean a government which will impose on us. So that was one point. And second is that certainly I agree that, as my friend speaker has mentioned, that unity and peace, that's what we all want, and that's what all movements want. And that's what my movement is also looking for. But I think that unity and peace you can get only through having a federal structure. And federal structure is a facilitating factor. It's not an imposing factor. It's not sort of taking our rights, but it's a very facilitating factor. And lastly, I want to say that, as I said in the beginning, that I personally, maybe I'm wrong, believe that some level of exploitation will always be there in the human beings, even if we make gods of these human beings, or mankind. And when I'm using the word gods, I don't mean in terms of religious, I mean in terms of higher, pious, civilized, or however we might make. And therefore, we cannot altogether expect that by demolishing capitalism or demolishing individualities among people who are going to manipulate or benefit or collect or something would ever be achieved. So I think I just wanted to make these points clear because I thought perhaps they were not understood.
Thanks, Mr. Zhou. Well, now we start questions and discussion. 1 minute, comrade. You are a member. Now, we like to hear some questions from the non-members. The priority is for them. Do please.
The questions are implicit, and I'll try and be as quick as possible because I don't agree.
Sorry, we want question, you know.
All right.
Very short question, not lecture. And you will have, okay?
Well, it seems to me you've had your go, but certainly I'll let other people have their goes. I mean, I think it's democracy. I think your case, most of the people here, the Socialist Party of Great Britain, I'm not, I don't know who else isn't. But you carry on because, you know. It's all right.
You have a question.
I've got plenty of questions, but I don't think you can really put questions in there. It's like sort of claiming that technology or any activity in this world is sort of neutral, you know. I mean, you take your stand, you take your position in... It's not just the answers, right? It's knowing what the questions are, right? And to do that, you need to have a position. You need to know where you're coming from. So,
well, any other question from any other? Let's go back here.
Although I'm a member, I understand that we'll have discussion later, won't we? I mean, we'll have discussion later.
Of course.
My friend.
Yeah, I'm quite happy to wait, because I mean, I appreciate this.
So the question I have in mind is to be helpful to all of us here. I just want our friend, the guest, to define what he means by exploitation. What does he mean by this when he talks about it? Exploitation will still continue. Can you give examples?
Exploitation is the same as our other guest speaker or your other guest speaker has said, that the capitalistic model exploits the labor. And that's the same, I'm saying. I'm saying that this exploitation, there will always be individual. Now, experience in China and Russia and other countries shows that they are coming to privatization. They think that everything belonging to nation is not. And if you go there, you will find that now they are sort of allowing people to do private business, private thing. So when they are doing it, eventually they are going to be capitalist in some form or the other in terms of mentality. They are going to save money from the laborers by giving them less wage, taking more work. So that's exploitation. So when you use money for earning more money.
Comrade Peter, do you have any...
Speak for half an hour on it. do you want me to make a comment on that?
Can I ask a question? I defer for a moment.
Yes, Comrade.
Yes, arising out of the last question and reply, I take the view that, and I don't know whether our friend would agree with it, but I take the view that exploitation, in plain terms, means that somebody's getting something for nothing out of somebody else. In other words, exploitation means getting something that somebody else produces. I mean, in a world of harmony, what function would this take? I mean, what need would there be for exploiting one section of the population? To whose benefit would the exploitation go, for example? You know, I mean, it seems to be somewhat of a contradiction to talk about one world, whether you call it world government or whatever you call it, and at the same time have a divisive factor like exploitation. I mean, that's what the trouble is all about just now, isn't it?
Would you like me to answer?
Well,
there are two levels of exploitation, in my opinion. One is individual level and the other is a national level. Now, when, for example, I ask you that we are British, and we are going to fight against Falkland, for Falkland, against Argentina.
Well, I'm not.
So, I'm just giving an example. Then I'm using the nationality character or characteristic that as exploitation purposes, for exploitation purposes. So that is the what you call nationality exploitation level. And individual is that if I am a rich man and I hire you to do something, and I, as I said earlier, that I pay you less than what you do, or take some advantage in some way. So that's the individual exploitation.
That's all right, is it?
Yeah. I'm not saying all right. I'm saying that we will never, in my opinion, I'm just giving my opinion. I wish that it was possible, but I'm giving that to some extent, I use the word some extent, exploitation would always exist among mankind because we cannot make mankind gods. So, again, as I said earlier, that I'm using the word God only in terms of pious character, I'm not using in terms of religion. So what I'm saying is that in the beginning I said we can improve things in the world, we cannot make 100% right. So we at least, at the moment, we are making people fight on the name of nationalities, religions. I mean, if we look at the history, all religions were basically our social institutions. And they were created through philosophies. And you can rationalize and justify that they all had a useful role. But over the period, they all have been misused and exploited. And under the name of religions, people made to fight and kill one another. And the people who had interest, they were doing it. So they were therefore making people fight through the religion. And that's the wrong with the religion. So I am against that. And that's why I ask people that be aware, don't be exploited under the name of religion. So similarly, I'm saying through this movement, we can diminish the idea of nationality, the way we have abolished within Britain the nationality of four countries, or within EEC we are abolishing. Now, I agree with my friend colleague speaker who said that I agree that this EEC is the outcome of the government interest. I also agree that it's the outcome of vested interest. I also agree that army is used for civil disobedience. And what I am only saying is that there would, again, police be there all the time, they would be there, but what I am saying is that the army which is used for other countries, that at least, or the weapons which are used other countries, against other countries, those expenses and those man resources could be saved. Thank you.
Comrade Eddie.
Mr. Gandhi mentioned that Britain going to war with Argentina over the Falklands was an example of the exploitation of people.
Exploitation of nationality factor.
Of nationality factor. Now, when Hitler, following Stalin's example, you mentioned that Stalin stabilized several different countries and made them one country, the USSR. When Hitler, following that idea of stabilization, wanted to make one country of Europe at least, there were people in other places that didn't accept that. I'd like your view as to whether you think that those countries that resisted Hitler's attempt at unification of Europe was also an exploitation of the nationality factor. And to give an example from elsewhere, whether when China invaded India, the Indian resistance of that was also exploitation of the nationality factor. Just so that we can measure quite what you mean by this.
Yes, definitely. What I am saying is that when we use army, see that people are used and they are given in return something. Now, in return, we can give financial things, benefits, or we can give psychological benefits. If I ask you look, here is we are Christians, here is a non-Christian, he has abused us. So therefore, I am using your Christianity faith to help me or to join me to fight against other people. So therefore, Hitler you have given the example of Hitler. Now, Hitler, number one, he wanted to unite by force. That was one thing. Secondly, as far as his own army was concerned, certainly he used them, exploited them, because he used the nationality factor. He asked, we are Germans, we want to rule. And as far as China and India is concerned, China, when used army, so certainly used again the concept of communism, socialism. They, because in the communist countries, they also, when they attack other country or this Russia or other, you know, these communist countries, so they tell their people that we want to bring communism in the world, because communism is the only way to. So therefore, they use that concept, which has been reinforced in them. Similarly, nationality is not a God-given thing. It has been reinforced in us by the social and the political circumstances. So nationality and divisions basically are political barriers which have been created by, again, politicians. And these politicians with the vested interest. Behind these politicians, there are always either power or money. These two factors are playing part. I don't deny that. And that's what my friend said, that in Russia there's a totalitarian power thing working, and in America there's money working. So that of course, I don't deny. But at the same time, I don't want to say that I am fighting or promoting the cause of a socialist party. Certainly, I say that the overall general concept of socialism is very good. I like it. I have great appreciation. But I am saying that if I make my movement a part of any political party, it would be seen as a party politics. I don't mind if it's seen as politics, because as I said, politics is a psychological word which means that anything to do with people is politics. Religion is also a politics. Our way of living is a politics. Cultural organization is politics. Grooming children, grooming up is a politics. So anything to do with politics. So I therefore want to remain a non-party political so that I don't create a paranoid thinking in the eyes of the people with their concepts or with their strong convictions of capitalism, or privacy, or their individual right to grow, or communists, or socialists, or whosoever they are. So I therefore don't want to associate with anybody. I'm just saying that it's a social reform movement. I don't think I can foresee so many factors, because I am not a a very seasoned, experienced worldwide authority on human life. But what I am saying, in a very simple way, as I said earlier, that I am seeking through this movement a world unity and world peace, as you have put in. And I think world unity and peace can come only through a world organization under one umbrella. That umbrella I see a democratically elected, and I see that there will be 3-4 years of systems of administration, and I see main authority would lie with the local systems, like say at the district level, local authorities, they would do all the basic things, or maybe there will be zones or states or regions, and there will be federal government. Federal government will be there only to make policies, and they are elected, directly elected, and in my concept of government, they would be serving us, we won't be serving them. But to create a sort of unity, the system, whatever that comes, it will have to accept that there are individuals, some individuals are born with leadership characteristics, some individuals are born with fighting characteristics, some individuals are born with psychopathic personalities, some individuals are born with collective tendencies. So they are going to collect. The ones who are looking for power, they are going to create some atmosphere where they can become leader. Because that is there in them. Similarly, the people who enjoy, exploiting, as again I'm using the word, they are going to do that in one way or the other. Whatever system we may create. So therefore, we have to accept, if we study a common human being, we find that 10-15% people at the top and 10-15% people at the bottom, on any variable, on height, on intelligence, on weight, on thinking, on philosophical matters, any variable you take. That's how the normal distribution takes place. So somebody has to be at the bottom to say that this is at the top. So the in between 80% people, and out of 80%, 50 or 60% people, they just go along. They are always influenced. One speaker stands up, whether he speaks emotionally or philosophically or religiously, he is able to lead a portion of them. Other speaker speaks, he is able to take a portion of them. So it's a matter who can influence more. And whatever level of our achievement we may go, now there was time for complete illiteracy. Now in India still we have 80% illiteracy. So there are people due to various factors are able to influence masses, and those masses, they now you have seen it. Indira Gandhi, in my opinion, there's nobody who could do this service to India in 15 years, what she has done. I'm not anti her, but I just common person. And the way she's been worshipped, So it's a mass mentality. We all have mass mentality. We all become part of the crowd and mass. This is a human psychology. This is a fact. You can't run away from it. What system you may create, it is always there. Yeah, please.
Yes, go ahead.
I've read for this address of yours, and I'd like to really ask you a question about limitations. And in doing that, I'd like something from the personal to the political.
Sorry, what was the first word you used?
The question really is about the limitations of your argument.
Yeah.
It's the question I'm going to ask you. In doing so, I'd like to move from the personal to political, right? If the chairman would bear with me. I've read your address, and I would suggest that you're attempting to change things without changing the present economic system, right? And it's doomed to failure. I also noticed that you were a consultant clinical psychologist. I would assume from that what you were dealing in is dealing with people who are supposed to have aberrant or deviant behaviour and treating them chemically. Is that right? You're treating them with drugs?
No,
is that not what a clinical psychologist does?
Well, I do treat people, but I personally don't specialise in chemicals and drugs and things. But I do treat people, yes.
Well, could I suggest you, and perhaps you'll correct me a little bit later, that a lot of clinical psychology is about restoring people to what's called normality. That's been, can I just finish this up?
Yes, please.
That's bringing people to an acceptable state of impatience.
Yes.
Behavior. Right. Then, I would suggest to you that why these people take on aberrant or deviant behaviour is because the system crushes people. And it's their way of trying to deal or undeal with the situation. I would suggest to you, you're limited in your personal job because you're not taking over all of your society and what it does to people. That's the limitations that are personal. Right? I would suggest that this society that we're living under, which is worldwide, is a system built on self-interest, materialism, and being self-acquisitive. That is the focal point which twists and contorts people mentally, right? And I don't think that you're going to solve any of that by trying to build a system that is. In your address, there is no commitment whatsoever to change the existing social conditions, right? And I suggest to you that both on a personal and a political level, you have got no chance.
So you want me to answer?
Yes.
Well, number one is that I 100% agree with you that many of my, professional colleagues or others, they are obliged to treat people to so-called what society expects them to be normal, that in a broader sense. And I also agree in relation to my professional questions you asked that abnormality and normality are relative things. But there are also many colleagues with whom I worked, and I am one of them, who don't crush their individualities. People come to me and they want help for item A. Say, let us say that they have stress. So they want to get rid of the stress. So I therefore discuss with them and apply certain non-chemical methods which can help them to release their stress. So I am not used by any system where I have to crush the individual. Individual's own choice who comes to me, and that's what I was doing when I was in the National Health Service, and that's what I am doing when I do work now privately. So that's one. Second is that I wish that I had that limited outlook. If I had that limited outlook, I wouldn't have left the job with all the comforts, with all the facilities, with the salary which is 10-20% of the higher level. I wouldn't have left that job and not live in with my hand to mouth in a limited money and just managing with a small, items of facilities, whereas I could get those better. So I have some feelings, I have some emotions, I have some vision, I have some thinking, and I have been trying to experiment with myself and with the in the society. I wish I could do some experiments like this in a place like India, where I thought people need it. But I thought I couldn't do it because of various reasons. There are people. It's difficult to communicate with people there because of various factors. So I thought that I could do something here. Now, whether I have never claimed that I would be successful completely within 1-2 years. I said in the beginning that it is a pressure group. This pressure group expresses opinion. It will be very democratic in the sense that you all who want to express their opinion, you express opinion. We collectively say to the government or the people that this is the way to look at life. If they want, well and good. If they don't want, well and good. If this movement remains like today's level of movement in 20 years, I won't be disappointed. Because I still think that I wanted to do something, I've started it, and I intend to do carry on. I don't want to offend anybody, I don't expect miracles. So therefore, I appreciate what you have said, and I thank you very much for your honest comments, but this is my outlook towards life.
Do you have any comment, Peter?
Well, I think what I'm beginning to emerge, there are a number of contradictions in Joe Gandhi's outlook, which I think he's got to think about and reconcile. A couple have occurred to me. In the first place, he says he's given up a good salary to work for a world ideal. And on the other hand, he says it's human nature to be exploitative. And it's hardly a good example of the exploitativeness of human nature to give up a good salary to strive for a world ideal. He might say that he's an exception to this human nature, but I would have thought that if there is such a thing as human nature, it's something that's binding on all of us as a result of our genetical inheritance and something that we can have no choice about, and yet he's saying is an exception to this. He's exercised an ethical option to give up these material goodies to work for a world ideal. Can I suggest that, you know, he's not the only exception to this? There are 4.5 billion other exceptions to this on the planet at the moment. In other words, this idea that human beings are inherently exploitative is a nonsense. But that's a contradiction in his argument that he's got to resolve. He's also spoken about... he doesn't want a world government that's going to act like the Thatcher government, you know, overbearing and dictatorial and all the rest of it. He wants it to be a kind of executive committee, is the word he used, which will respond to the instructions of the wider community. Now, there's another contradiction in there, because he said it was human nature for people to be led, and yet at the same time he wants a system of democracy where those who administer society respond to the democratic instructions of the wider community. So he's got to sort that one out. I would say he's right on saying that it's possible for us to have a democratic society and that we don't actually need a government of the dictatorial type. But there's another very, very important theme which is running through this, which is really closely linked with the whole issue of democracy and unity. And that's the whole question of social control. Because if you're going to make conscious democratic decisions about what society is going to do, it assumes that you've actually got control over social affairs. Now, you have to accept the case that capitalism and the way the market system operates is not susceptible to that sort of democratic control. How is it possible, for example, for the ordinary citizen to make decisions about production? How many cars we're going to produce, or how much energy we're going to generate? Capitalism doesn't allow for it, because capitalism doesn't produce these things for human needs. It produces them for the sale of the market. And the levels of production are not determined by the ordinary people at work. They're not even determined by the enterprises who have these things under their control. They're not even determined by governments. This government, this Tory government, which is as dictatorial as any you can get, cannot actually make conscious and deliberate decisions about the levels of production in any field of production that you might care to take. They're totally at the mercy of economic forces that they can't control. And that is a condition of capitalist society, which is upon the whole structure of society at every level. And the fault lies in the operation of the market system. And arising from that is that you do not have a rational society which is susceptible to democratic control. The making of conscious decisions and then the organisation of social resources to get to implement those decisions.
Can I answer? Interrupt?
Just let me round off the point. Now, with socialism and common ownership of the means of production, the abolition of the market system and the production of goods through the cooperation of people directly for human needs, you can make those conscious democratic decisions because you've got your production under the democratic control of the community. And so you've got to keep coming back to this fundamental economic factor, which we stress is the main barrier to world unity, it's the barrier to world democracy, and it's the barrier to the harmony that we want.
Can I not answer his question?
When you sum up.
No, I will forget what.
Write down. Come here, Steve.
Yeah. I would like to ask Dr. Gandhi a very simple question. What does he propose to do with people who don't want to be governed? I have a specific reason for asking this question, because I am, in fact, such a person. I have no intention of being governed. I have no interest whatsoever in having a police force which will ensure that I do what I am told. I will, as long as I live, have contempt and hostility and active hatred towards those who govern or coerce, those who bully or impose our morality upon other people in any shape or form. And I don't care if they're world governments. In fact, I'm a bit frightened about this world government, because the world's a big place, and whichever nasty little sod is going to get to the top of the world, he's going to be a right vicious little bastard, because he's going to climb up over the Chernenkos, the Reagans, the Thatchers, the Kinnocks, and all of the other dirty little swines, and become the top dog. And I'm going to be a bit afraid of this person. And in a socialist society, in the world government society, whoever this person is, if he allows me to do so democratically, I should oppose him. If he doesn't, I should do my best to assassinate him. So, or the world, or her. So the world government has got at least one enemy before it even starts. Dr. Gandhi is an opponent. He stands for world government. And incidentally, I like the speaker. I'm in favour of what I think you actually want. I'm not in favour of what I think you're going to get. And that's a very common political dispute between people. What they want is great, and what they get is horrible. Dr. Gandhi, you, as a supporter of world government, have to oppose two groups of people. One, people who are against a worldwide conception of love. Therefore, you have to be fundamentally opposed to nationalists, regionalists, people who don't want to see things on a worldwide basis. Although I'm sure that, like myself and like the Socialist Party, you would accept that there would be cultural variation in your world society. So I'm with you all the way there. I am in favour of a worldwide, global approach to every problem that humanity faces. For every vision that humanity has, it has to be a global vision. But as a supporter of world government, you also have to be hostile, not only to nationalists, but to opponents of government. Therefore, it should be your concern to go out and do your utmost to say to people who want to get rid of all government, whether it is local, national, or world, that you're against them. And the Socialist Party and our companion parties across the world, we are a party that stands for the abolition of all government, all states, and everything that they are involved. So I would like to ask the direct question, what would happen under the world government to people like myself and my comrades in the socialist movement, who would be fighting as fiercely as ever with our ideas to bring down the world government?
Well, the concept of government is or being governed, the concept, this has, is in my opinion, is a very relative concept or relative, philosophical question. I would say that we may say that we don't want to be governed by the standards of moralities, but we all are in favor of some kind of discipline. Now, while you sitting here, you have elected a president, and he's in the chair, and he is observing this discipline for all of you. He's answerable to you, but you have given him the authority for the time being to conduct this meeting. So this is what we call discipline. And that discipline, we all agree. If we don't agree, then we couldn't be collectively be talking. Now, if we don't come to an arrangement that we will speak one by one, then we would never be able to speak. We all are speaking like mad people, and nobody would listen who is speaking who to whom. So therefore, it's something that as... Now, in India we have democracy, here we have democracy. Now, I am not... I have experienced both, and I am not being critical or destructively critical. I am being... as much fair as I can be, understanding the two situations. Now, here we have a class of people who are democratically matured. I'm not saying that Indian people are stupid and fools. I am saying that they democratically have not matured, because democracy there came only 30 years back, and that also is for the last 30 years has been passing through various kinds of vested interests and the corruption and which have been extreme. Now, I'm not saying Britain is a haven. Here are also, it's a relative thing, that corruption of level, how much takes place in what place. Now, similarly, the level of discipline is a relation to that. Now, somewhere in Russia, there could be that much discipline strict that you couldn't stand up in a speaker's corner like you can stand up here. Now, here you can stand up. In India, you stand up, so the Prime Minister or the other people are quiet at the moment, but you only know after 2 days you have been assassinated. You don't know who. So it's a relative thing. But wherever, whatever system we organize, we all have to arrange and agree that some kind of discipline level, which is give and take, it's a coexistence. So whatever discipline you may call that, whether you call it government or being governed, or you call it being told, or whatever, it's all hypothetical. I think as we mature, as we become better and better understanding of the way we want to live, we help our discipline to become more and more acceptable, because it becomes less and less authoritarian. So therefore, that's the answer to your question. But I think it's very fair that to expect from me to answer the comments which my friend made. Now, first, my statement is that whenever somebody makes a statement, it is in relation to the context in which the statement is made. Now, first thing which I said about my profession, I left job. I am not saying that I am an exception. I am not saying I am pious or super. I only answered this gentleman's question, that I only said that I was limited in my thinking. And I was only saying that if I was limited in my thinking, then perhaps I would not have left all those facilities and come do something here. So therefore, that was not a contradiction. It was a statement, answer to his question. And second observation which he mentioned, that was again some connection with some contradictions, and he said about executive committee and so on. Now, I don't know how to put it. Sometimes you cannot get an appropriate word. But for me, government is like a management committee. Executive committee, you can call it. You can call it government. The name is not important. It's the way you bring that government into the power, and the way you educate those people who are there sitting, and the way you tell them that what is their role is, that's the way it functions. Now, in this country, in spite of the democracy, we have always, over the years, we look at history, we have given the government right to impose their will on us. So they have been doing it. We have to re-educate them, not to impose their will on us, that on matters of significance, they should come back to us and ask our opinions again. So that's the way they will do it. So it's a relation and feedback and give and take between the public and the system. So I am not, again, here I must qualify again, that I don't think I'm a very humble, ordinary person. And I don't have experience of so many things. I'm starting movement, hoping that many of the experienced people, many of better and far-sighted people would eventually join and enrich my thinking and participation theirs and so on. So I am only starting it, or I have started it. So therefore, it's going to be subjected to so many modifications, so many improvements, so many practical abilities, so many factors which all people who would be interested in promoting it would participate and influence, I am sure.